Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Heart of Gold by Violet Ray. Narrated by Quinn Riley and Oliver Highpoint. Chapter 1. Gemma.
You did what?
I wince at my mother's screech. This is the confrontation I've been dreading. I left my job at Abraham's, the high-end jeweler, and after 4 years of hard graft, I've finally made it. And I've accomplished everything without my parents' financial help or emotional support. College degree? Check. Apprenticeship with an industry giant? Been there, done that. Okay, it wasn't a brilliant success, but I'm damn proud of myself for getting through it and seeing out my notice period. I took what I learned from that experience and poured my heart and soul into launching my business. I've plowed all my free time into making my bespoke jewelry and spent the last year turning Heart of Gold into a successful online business while holding down a full-time job. And now that I've cemented my position as an independent artist, I'm opening my first brick-and-mortar shop in my hometown of Garland, Colorado, in time for those Valentine's Day sales. Trouble is, I didn't tell my parents what I was doing. Until now. They've never shown any interest in my chosen occupation, and I knew things would go downhill fast once they discovered I'd sunk the remainder of my trust fund into my business venture. I was right. My mouth is dry as I look at my mother. She's as perfectly put together as always. Her blonde hair is perfectly coiffed, her makeup subtle yet flattering, and she looks casually elegant in her loungewear. She's my polar opposite. Sometimes it's hard to believe we're mother and daughter. Physically, I favor my father, having inherited his hazel eyes, thicker build, and coloring. As usual, he stands behind my mother, always in her shadow. He likes a quiet life and does precisely what his wife says in order to have one. It never ceases to amaze me that my brother Callum and I have turned out as well-balanced as we are. Our grandparents have a lot to do with it. They thought they were destined never to have children until Grams fell pregnant with my mother in her mid-40s. Being older grandparents, Callum and I didn't have them for long. But we spent some of our formative years with them before we lost Gramps to a heart attack. Grams followed less than a month later, and I've always been convinced she died of a broken heart. They were together for more than 50 years and doted on each other. When they died, everything changed. My mother inherited the family business my Gramps founded, and my father quit his job as a salesman to help her run it. She went from a stay-at-home mom who baked, played, and helped us with our homework to the owner of Bridge Financial Services with no time for her kids. The country club, huge house, and materialistic trappings came next. She had everything she wanted except for one thing. Neither of her children wanted to step into the family business. Newsflash! You don't always get what you want in this life, but Megan Stone never got the memo. Guilt hits me. I've lied to my parents by omission, but I wanted to get everything finalized before I faced their criticisms. Their disappointment in me is nothing new. It's ingrained in every decision I've ever made. The sad reality is I have more chance of catching a fart in a sieve than convincing my parents my business venture is sound. But I couldn't keep living a lie. It wasn't fair to my parents or me. And it certainly wasn't fair to Callum, who I swore to secrecy. Callum is the golden boy who can do no wrong. I've never matched up to him in my parents' eyes. He's handsome, strong, and a genuinely good person. the star student with a promising career as a professional football player, until the night when I pushed the memories to one side. The pain and guilt still cut deeply. Callum and I are close, despite my parents' favoritism. No matter what, Callum has always been my biggest supporter, and I needed to share my news about the shop with at least one family member who was as excited as me. So, today was the day to announce my new venture to my parents. My father will come around in time, but my mother will be more of a challenge. I swear she'd rather staple her tongue to a moving train than have me open a small-town jewelry store. Not impressive or ambitious enough for the daughter of Leonard and Megan Stone. My father reacts to my news with his usual impatient huff and a disapproving shake of his head. But my mother isn't shy in expressing her disdain. "How could you do this without telling us? How could you waste your trust fund on some trinket shop? Your grandparents would be turning in their graves, Gemma." I bite my tongue. "It's not a trinket shop. It's a boutique to showcase my jewelry. Grams and Grams didn't put a single stipulation on how Callum and I used our trust fund. In fact, I think they'd be proud. I'm almost 23, damn it. I'm an independent woman, and I've worked my ass off to achieve my dream. Don't curse in this house, young lady." My mother's mouth is tight with displeasure as she sits on the plush sofa that cost more than I earn in 6 months. "You need to find a way out of whatever agreement you've signed with this woman. Bet. Her name is Bet. She was my teacher in high school, remember?" Mom waves a hand dismissively. "There were so many teachers. I can't remember all their names, darling." Keeping my new business a secret from my parents in our small town hasn't been easy. I specifically asked Bet to keep my identity under wraps until the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted, giving me time to summon the courage to tell my parents. I shake my head. "No. It's a done deal. The contract is signed, the shop is leased, and I have 5 weeks to prepare for the grand opening on Valentine's Day." "You can't seriously expect to make a living selling jewelry in Garland. There's no market for it here," my mother says. I clench my hands into fists. Once again, she's made me feel like I don't matter. I've spent my life trying to please my parents and coming up short. No, not this time. "I don't believe that. I already have a successful online business, and there's nothing else like it in Garland or surrounding towns. This isn't some spur-of-the-moment decision. I've done my research and worked hard to make this a reality. All I'm asking is that you have a little faith in me." My mother sniffs. "You could have been married now if you'd stayed with James." I shake my head in disbelief. "James Alderman? Mother, I dated him in high school for all of 2 seconds. If she had her way, my mother would marry me off, have us join their country club, and pop out perfect little grandkids for her to parade around. She was more upset than I was when James dumped me right before graduation prom. Her perfect vision of my life isn't working out the way she planned. I'm not working out the way she planned. Too much of a tomboy, too clumsy, too spontaneous, too unpredictable. Too much of everything. And things only got worse after the accident. Since then, I've tried twice as hard to be the daughter they want. I've tried to make my mother happy, but the life she envisions for me would make me wither up and die inside. He would have made a good husband and provider, Unlike that boy you used to moon over. Her lip curls in disgust as she says, that boy. She means Bentley Cormac, Callum's best friend. The guy I gave my heart to. And the person she blames for the accident. If only she knew. My heart still aches for him, even after all these years. All I'm asking is that you withhold judgment until you've seen it for yourself. Opening day is the Saturday before Valentine's Day, and I would love it if you would be there. My father glances at my mother.
She's our daughter, Megan. We should support her, regardless of whether we disagree with her choices.
Jesus, don't break your necks putting yourselves out. I swallow the words on the tip of my tongue. Mother sighs.
Perhaps.
Her eyes lift to mine.
We just wish you'd chosen differently with your career.
Callum was destined for bigger things career-wise, so they pinned their hopes on me gaining my bachelor's degree and slotting into the family business like the respectful, obedient daughter they always wanted. Guess I threw a wrench in that little plan.
We love you, Gemma. Don't ever doubt that, my father adds with a reassuring smile.
Don't ever doubt that? How can I not? Actions speak louder than words, and their actions have fallen far short over the years. I'm pretty sure my mother would rather set fire to her eyelash extensions or trade their 5,000-square-foot house with its exquisite mountain view than come to the grand opening of my little store. But I'll take what I can get. They're trying, which has to count for something.
Have you gained more weight?
My mother asks, running her hands over my abundant curves.
Didn't you try that diet I sent you?
No, Mother. I've been too busy. Besides, I have no desire to starve myself.
If you just stopped eating those awful toffees you like,
bonbons,
I'm sure you could lose several pounds in a few weeks by excluding carbs.
I slip into a coma for the next 30 minutes while she spouts the virtues of a zero-carb diet. I leave my parents and follow the familiar mountain road into town. I've been back and forth to Garland while at college and working for Abraham Jewelers, but I've missed living in my hometown. Almost as much as I miss the man who left this place with my heart. Bentley. My heart squeezes as a hot tear slides down my cheek. You'd think I'd be over him by now. It still hurts, knowing that, like my parents, I wasn't enough for him. One of these days, I'm going to have to face my parents and tell them that they need to accept me for who I am, rather than the perfect image they've created in their head. One I can never live up to. I dash my tears away and shake my head to ward off the sudden emotions, causing my shoulder-length chestnut curls to bob around my face. I need to stop feeling sorry for myself. I need to stop pining for emotional support that will never materialize. As if feeling my pain, my little Chevy whines at the steep incline of the next hill. I swallow the lump in my throat and pat the dashboard. Come on, girl. Don't die on me now. Garland is over the next rise, and my heart thumps against my ribs in anticipation. I reach the crest of the hill, and my hometown is spread out before me, surrounded by snow-dusted mountains. The Douglas firs are a striking contrast to the blue sky as I weave through a series of hairpin bends before reaching the flat stretch of road leading into the town. Garland hasn't changed much since I was a kid.
The road morphs into a wider avenue, separated by a central divider with neatly trimmed foliage. Wooden benches sit on the sidewalks and quaint shops line the street. The cafe, charity shop, clothing store, and homewares store. Also, Valentine's Kitchen, the bakery owned and run by Natasha Valentine, or Natasha Thompson, now that she's married to Link, the local mechanic. I love the sense of community here. Sure, we have the busybodies like any small town, but if anyone is ever in need, people step up to help. My gaze falls on the shop on the corner. The sign still reads Bet's Book Corner, but will soon be replaced by Heart of Gold, where I'll sell my jewelry creations. Pride and joy hit me hard as I park in the empty spot out front. I received the sign I'd been waiting for in September last year. Bet Sanders, my mentor and English teacher from high school, called to say she was retiring, for the second time. When she left teaching, she opened a bookshop and study area on Main Street, offering her tutoring services for free to low-income families. Now in her early 70s, she decided it was time to hang up her thesaurus and move to the Caribbean to see out the rest of her days in the sun. Which meant her little shop was available for lease. She'd bought it outright, so I would now be leasing it from her. A woman I trust who's listened to my many woes and grumbles over the years, and offered me the maternal advice lacking in my life. It's a win-win situation. Bet has a source of income while she suns it up in the Caribbean, and I have the opportunity to realize my dream. I jump out of the car, my footsteps light and my smile growing as I approach my store. Mine. The thought never fails to give me a small thrill. Rifling in my purse, I pluck out the key Bet gave me and unlock the door. The hinges squeak as I push it open, and I make a mental note to oil them before the grand opening. I flip on the light switch. Nothing. I look up. Looks like the bulb has blown. But there's still enough daylight to look the place over. My mental to-do list expands like my favorite body-shaping underwear when forced to contain my abundant curves as I wander from the shop floor to the stockroom at the back, envisioning the changes I'm going to make. Work has already started, but there's still a lot to do before this place is fit for public consumption. Thankfully, the electrics and plumbing are in good working order, saving me a lot of money. I don't have a huge budget, so I've been doing some of the work myself, and rather than being daunted at the prospect, I couldn't wait to get started. This is my passion, my project, an extension of myself, and the creativity my parents have never valued. In a way, I'm glad they won't see this place until opening day. No point in showing them an empty shell they'll pick apart with their criticisms. While I can see past the tired decor and the holes in the walls left behind Bet's bookshelves, I'm not so sure my mother will. I smile wistfully at the faint aroma of old books that still lingers in the air. Bet's enthusiasm as a teacher instilled in me a love of books and made reading and literature fun. She also got me interested in book clubs, which has led to some fantastic friendships. I think of my girls, Cleary, Devin, Mandy, Cordy, Tabitha, and Peyton. We're all so different, yet we bonded over our love of books. Our group chat is equal parts emotional and hilarious as we navigate life's ups and downs together. My phone pings, and I pull it from my coat pocket. As if my thoughts have summoned them, I see the messages I've missed from the girls in our group chat. They're responding to my earlier message about Valentine's Day approaching. Me. Valentine's Day sucks.
Cordy.
Nope. No way. We are not moping on Valentine's Day this year.
I love Cordy. She's a sweetheart and always so upbeat and positive.
Tabitha.
We always mope on Valentine's Day.
Tabitha's not wrong. None of us are in a relationship, and it's no secret that Valentine's Day sucks if you're single.
Cleary.
It's our thing.
Devon.
It's why we have wine.
Me.
You have wine. I'll stick to my chocolate liqueurs. Booze and chocolate without the hangover.
I add an emoji with its tongue out.
Mandy.
And cake. Cake is a must.
Peyton.
Don't forget book boyfriends. They help ease the ache, LOL.
Cleary.
Especially when paired with the rose.
I still need to find out what all the fuss is about with this rose.
Cordy.
I have an idea.
I can almost hear the collective groan of our group and snigger at Peyton's next comment.
Peyton.
Wait up. I just need to grab a flak jacket.
Me.
Oh, Lord. Last time you had an idea, we almost got arrested. And I never did find my inflatable dolphin.
I loved that dolphin.
Devon.
That was the night I came home with one shoe. Your dolphin's probably with my lost sparkly stiletto.
Mandy.
Rum and I broke up after the last time we all got together. I can't see a bottle without feeling a little nauseous.
It's true. It was messy.
Peyton.
See? That's why I keep my nose buried in a book. You girls are dangerous.
Cordy.
I'm not that bad.
Cleary.
Yes, you are.
Peyton.
Cordy, I love you, but you are on a whole other level.
Cleary.
Peyton's not wrong, sweets. You should come with a special kind of warning label.
Cordy.
Anyway, I think we should make a pact.
I frown, wondering what Cordy has in mind.
Mandy.
What kind of pact?
Me. This better not require a blood sacrifice.
Cordy.
We're all spending Valentine's Day doing something we'd never do.
Something we'd never do? In my case, that's a list as long as my arm.
Devon.
Like what?
Cordy.
Whatever you want. I saw an ad in the paper this morning for a mountain man looking for an assistant for 2 weeks. Maybe I'll call.
Cleary.
You aren't serious.
Cordy.
I'm completely serious.
My mind ticks over as the idea gains momentum.
Jem.
I like the idea. Maybe I'll take the plunge with that exhibition in the next town. Show off a few of my creations.
Peyton.
It's insane, but I like it.
Mandy.
Something we would never do? It's a terrible idea. We don't do things for a reason.
Mandy has a point.
Devon.
Fine. I'm in. One of the volunteers at the rescue keeps wanting to fix me up with her nephew. Next time she offers, I promise I'll say yes.
Cleary.
But do you know the statistics of how many women go off to do something on their own and get targeted by a predator? I have statistics. So many statistics.
Yeah, Cleary loves her statistics.
Me.
You know what they say. You don't grow if you stay in your comfort zone.
Mandy.
Jem, that's an amazing idea. Your pieces are beautiful.
Maybe you're right.
I can't believe I am saying this, but I'm in. I'm going to book that boudoir shoot I've been thinking about.
Warmth envelops me at Mandy's praise. It's always good to hear that others like my creations.
Peyton. Well, if you girls are game, I'm doing it too. I was going to send the latest conservation report to the property developer, but I'm going to confront him in person.
Cordy.
So, we're doing it then?
Cleary. I have a work conference in Vegas during Valentine's, but I suppose I could dip my toe out of my comfort zone.
Peyton. I'm standing up for what I believe in, and I'm not backing down.
That's my girl, Peyton.
Me.
Yay!
Cleary.
Maybe I'll quit the sheriff's office and become a showgirl.
Mandy.
I hate wine chats.
Devon.
Aw, Mandy, don't blame the wine. Whatever happens, it will all be Cordy's fault. I'm already regretting this.
Cordy.
I'm actually looking forward to Valentine's Day now.
Yay! This is going to be so much fun!
My girls have lit a fire under me, and a few other ideas of how I can push myself out of my comfort zone pop into my head.
No more self-doubts. No more sacrificing my wants and needs to please others. It's time for Gemma Stone to step forward and claim her place in this life.
Chapter 2. Gem.
I can't do it, Peyton. What the hell was I thinking? I can't take my clothes off in front of a complete stranger.
Babe, you're overthinking it. These artistic types have seen it all before. Besides, the guy's in his 60s, right? And he works at the university, so you know he's not some sketchy perv who wants to check out your penis flytrap for shits and giggles.
Not helping, Pei. And penis flytrap? I wish.
I glare at her on my phone screen, having video called her 10 minutes ago in a panic as my appointment loomed closer.
Listen, Jem, we all agreed to this pact, and you're the one who said we don't grow if we stay in our comfort zone, she says, quoting me word for word from our group chat.
Why the heck didn't I just stick with showing my jewelry at the upcoming art festival in Crystal Peak? I lean my head against the pillows on my bed with a groan.
Yeah, but that was when I said I'd be displaying my jewelry at the local fair, not flopping my tits out for a life drawing.
Which was your idea, by the way, I say with a hint of accusation.
Because you asked me to come up with suggestions to help you shed the old gem and bring forth the new,
Peyton reminds me, using her most dramatic voice.
You could have taken the skydiving option I came up with, or the vampire blood facial, or even the zombie roleplay thing at that abandoned shopping mall. But no, I distinctly remember you saying how great it would be to finally embrace your curves with a tasteful life drawing you could hang over your bed. Out with the old gem and in with the new, blah blah. You even used big words like caterpillar, metamorphosis, and butterfly.
Ugh, I did, didn't I?
But in my defense, I was on a sugar high from the lemon bonbons and chocolate liquors when we made our pact.
You and your sweet tooth.
Peyton sighs and shakes her head, sending her long, dark hair dancing around her shoulders.
You know sugar is 8 times more addictive than cocaine, right?
I laugh. Are you suggesting I start snorting a line instead of popping a bonbon?
Peyton grins. Never. You stick to your bonbons and I'll stick to my wine. I'll need a vat of this stuff to confront Mr. Property Developer with my conservation report.
What was I thinking? Hey, maybe we can swap?
I'll wax my undercarriage and lounge seductively on synthetic fur for Mr.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?